All right, hockey fans, listen up, because we've got something special cooked up for playoff season. It's called the Daily Faceoff Playoff Parlay Challenge, and it's going to add some serious spice to your playoff experience. Now, here's the deal. Every playoff game, you're going to be faced with a handful of questions. It's like your own personal playoff puzzle, and it's free to join. And there are prizes, because who doesn't love winning stuff? Daily winners, you're getting hooked up with gift cards. Treat yourself to some nation gear or maybe even your favorite jersey. And for the big dogs, the people who can win an entire round, it's straight, cold, hard cash. We're talking about real dough for your hockey knowledge. So lace up those skates, stretch those thumbs, and get ready to show off your hockey IQ in the Daily Faceoff Playoff Parlay Challenge. Sign up today and play every game day at games.dailyfaceoff.com and prove your puck prowess.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weight loss. That's PlushCare.com/weight loss. PlushCare.com/weight loss.
Rinkwide Vancouver. Clinching a playoff spot and reaching 100 points is going to have to wait for another night as the Vancouver Canucks fall 3-2 to the visiting Los Angeles Kings. This is the 500th episode of Rinkwide Vancouver. We're coming your way from our Rinkwide studio in the Wall Center Hotel. And center really says it all. The Wall Center, truly in the middle of downtown Vancouver, close to just about everything from restaurants to shopping to sports venues to English Bay and Stanley Park. If you're looking for a place to stay in the heart of the city, consider the Sheraton Wall Center. Jeff Patterson joined on this episode by Farhan Lalji of TSN and Farhan the Kings. They're not pretty to watch. They're not much fun to play against, I'm sure, if you're the Vancouver Canucks and other teams in the National Hockey League, but they know exactly who they are, and they play their system to a T.
Yeah, and when you look at potential first-round opponents for Vancouver, put my hand up for one who doesn't want to see the LA Kings. And you could talk about Edmonton's firepower, and you could talk about Vegas's experience and Nashville's hot streak and all of those things. I do not want to see the LA Kings. I mean, they know how to play. You talk about it. They know who they are, and they also know who the Vancouver Canucks are and where the strengths and weaknesses of those two teams match up. And I'm not suggesting for a second the LA Kings are better than the Canucks or they're better than the other potential first-round opponents for the Canucks, but they might be the worst matchup. And from a fan perspective, the least entertaining team to watch if you're looking for an epic series.
Well, jump in the time machine with me, go back a decade. Seems to me that they've got a couple of banners hanging at Crypto.com, what was once Staples Center.
It's always going to be Staples to me.
I know. But playing and employing this style of hockey. So they, again, as an organization, they understand it. Different personnel, although Drew Doughty and Anze Kopitar were there then, and they're still here. And Kopitar has been a thorn in the Canucks' side all season long because Los Angeles has picked up 5 of a possible 6 points against the Canucks in their 3 head-to-head meetings. Yes, the Canucks beat them 2-1 in overtime down in Los Angeles, but the Kings have come to town twice now. This is a Vancouver hockey club that's been exceptional at Rogers Arena all season long, just 8 outright losses. And the Kings are responsible for 2 of them. Now, this game was closer than the first one when they beat the Canucks 5-1 and really skated circles around the Vancouver Canucks that night. But they stifle you. They throw a blanket over you. And if you get a lead, look out. Now, they got the lead here. And to the Canucks' credit, they pushed right back and tied the game at 1. And actually, I thought over the balance of the first period and really the first 10 minutes of the second, I thought opportunities were there. I thought the Canucks were the better team. But at the end of the night, did they outscore the Los Angeles Kings? No, they didn't, and there were some missed opportunities for the home side.
Well, and when you talk about how good they've been in their two games in Vancouver, in fairness to the Canucks, the game in LA, the Canucks are very good in that game. You know, and they came away with 2 points full value. So the Canucks can have success against this team if their best players are playing their best. And right now, they didn't in this game. And I agree with you. I think in the first period and in the second period, there were like 10-minute blocks where it looked like the Canucks were taking over. Right? They tie the game in the first period. They continued to push. They had other scoring chances. Maybe not necessarily high grades, but high quality possessions. And then in the second period, I saw a lot of that too. And then all of a sudden, you get to the end of the second period, which I think has been a bit of kryptonite for the Vancouver Canucks since the All-Star break. And I know that Quinn Hughes was asked about it at one point and said, you know, I'm not sure what trends you're talking about. And then kind of later recalled one more and probably forgot to recall a couple of others. But we know that whether it was the Colorado game or the Washington game or the Montreal game or this game, they've given up late second period goals. And that's something you don't want because it affects your momentum going into the third. And in this game, in the first 15 minutes of the third period, that was the biggest indictment for the Canucks because one shot through 15 plus minutes, right? And they got the goal with the goalie pulled, and then they were able to apply a lot of pressure. I think they had 7 shots. They had 8 in the period. 7 of them really came in that final push. But for the first 15, almost 16 minutes, there was nothing doing for the Vancouver Canucks. They weren't even close to a high danger at that point.
Well, there's a lot to dig into in that third period alone, just the way that Rick Tocchet went about deploying his forward group particularly. I certainly want to get to all of that, but let's start at the start here because, again, this was a night that the Canucks had an opportunity to clinch a playoff spot for the first time in 4 years. They had a chance to get to 100 points. Now, they needed to help themselves and get a win and then get a little help elsewhere, as it turned out. St. Louis did lose in overtime to Vegas. So the Blues could only get 1 point on the night, and that opened the door, but the Canucks fall short here. So again, they're going to have to wait. They're going to be a playoff team with 98 points. They'll be there when the playoffs begin, but they don't have that X beside their name just yet. But this game had the feel of two teams that understand that they could be on a collision course, whether it's in round one, maybe it's round two, but they also still have one more game to go in the regular season in Los Angeles on the 6th of April. So the Canucks are going to have to endure another meeting with the Los Angeles Kings. But the big hit by Nikita Zadorov on Blake Lizotte kind of setting the tone. A bunch of slashes and it got a little greasy in the early going. And I'm okay with that because I think this Canuck team needs to be battle tested. And I think there are some questions about how are they going to stand up when games get dragged into the gutter come playoff time, as they invariably do. It's not the 80s anymore. I get that. But you know, there's still message sending come playoff time and all of that. And so there are some things I think that this team still has to show you. Whatever the case, for an early start on a Monday night, I thought there was some feeling in the building and in this game early on.
Yeah, I mean, you talk about that play. Ian Cole drilled Trevor Lewis in the corner with about a minute to go in the first period. And shots after the first period were 19-11 for Vancouver. So 30 shots in a period is a big number. And from a Canuck perspective, to dish out 19 of them, yeah, you get the sense they know what was at stake tonight, that they did have a chance to clinch and get to 100. I know the players aren't going to say it mattered. It did matter. If we would have asked them after a win about that game, they would have admitted that, yeah, they've got bigger things that they're focused on right now, but to get that milestone out of the way, especially given how awful the last, you know, other than the bubble year, just really what it's been like here for the better part of the last decade, yeah, it would have meant something to them. And whether it's that or whether it's a potential a second round or first round matchup against the Kings, that emotion, that feeling was there early on in this period, right? And the Canucks, when they gave up the first goal, you always talk about when you face the Kings, don't give up the first goal because then they can really get into their game. But they got that goal and the Canucks were really the better team for the rest of that period after. I thought they responded well. Unfortunate first goal, Brock Besser, not a good effort on the entry by the Kings.
Just overall, not a good night. But
sure, but on that particular play, I mean, that wasn't good. And the Canucks also get caught on a change where one of their players doesn't jump on the ice and they're defending with four. So that wasn't necessarily a good start, but I thought they responded well after that.
They did. And it's Vasily Podkolzin growing in confidence by the game and now starting to see some payoff for his hard work. You know, it wasn't necessarily about finding his way onto the score sheet, but a 10th overall draft pick in his class, there has to be some expectation at some point that there is going to be some offensive production, and it is starting to come. But, like, forget the assist. He gets the assist on the Lafferty goal, but it was him just absolutely hunting down Victor Arvidsson, stealing the puck from him a couple of times. Like, it was the first one, but then stays with it. And then Sam Lafferty showing some finesse as he worked his way to the front of the net, able to pull that puck to his forehand and tuck it home, tied the game at one again, got the crowd into it, 12 goals on the season now for Sam Lafferty. And that's where we said from that point on, thought the Canucks were pretty good. Quinn Hughes, a little bit of frustration. He was on the receiving end of a hit from Arvidsson. You don't see that very often. Takes the slashing penalty. So the Kings had the power play. The Canucks also had the first power play of the game, though, and did nothing with it. And that's been sort of a theme as well on this homestand and really since the All-Star break. And so, you know, when we talked about some missed opportunities on the night, neither team scored on the power play. So it wasn't like they lost the game on special teams, but these tight games, you know, they finally got the power play goal the other night against Calgary. Kings have the best penalty killing in the National Hockey League. And just file that away, because again, if they meet each other in the playoffs, if the Kings are able to neutralize the power play, then you're going to have to find ways to beat them 5-on-5. And to your point, the Kings have opened the scoring now in all three games against the Vancouver Canucks. In fact, to take it even further than that, I know the Canucks won 2-1 at Crypto. They didn't ever play with the lead there. They were down 1-0. They tied it up and then they won in overtime. So in the run of play, three games against the Los Angeles Kings, the Canucks have yet to skate with the lead. And it matters, because when Los Angeles gets the lead, they're able to sort of establish the way they want the game to go. And Rick Tocchet's talked so many times throughout the year about this team getting comfortable in uncomfortable situations. And at 1-1, again, I thought they were okay. But then it gets to the dreaded late stages of that second period. And, you know, the delayed penalty, Carson Soucy was going to get called. Kings get the extra attacker out there. They work the puck around. Canucks didn't do a particularly good job of, you know, ever touching the puck, obviously. So the Kings were able to continue to control, and bouncing puck finds its way. And I guess Lizotte was the last guy to touch it. Unfortunately, a tough shift for Carson Soucy. Not only the delayed penalty, but puck hit him a couple of times before it winds up in the back of the net. And that put Los Angeles in front again. And then less than 2 minutes later, they're able to extend that lead to 3-1. Anze Kopitar is 24th of the season. Should Casey DeSmith have been able to make the original save?
Should have been able to control the original rebound, because he made the save, and he, that's really where it happened, right? I mean,
Byfield gets in there and
he couldn't handle the rebound, and then there's a massive scramble, and Hughes tries to kick the puck into the corner, but before it could even get to the goal line, Kopitar made his way back around the net before Lafferty could get to him, and winds up making no mistake in burying it. So, you know, Kopitar had his fingerprints all over this one, gets an assist, gets a goal, and then the Brock Besser shot that goes off Kopitar into the Kings net to get the Canucks back in it late in the third period. But, you know, I want to go back to that first power play. And, you know, it feels to me like Hughes and Pettersson, for whatever reason, are just off with each other. And that's been a theme a lot this year, right? Because the last time I was on this show, you and I talked about how Pettersson needs the puck on a tee. He doesn't have, you know, to quote a football analogy, he doesn't have a big catch radius, right? Like, he needs it right there in order to make that shot. And whether Hughes hasn't been getting it to him right there, or he's just been moving off that spot, but there were some moments where they just couldn't connect. And that happened later on in the second power play that they got as well. So hopefully between now and the end of the season, they can get comfortable in that spot, because I like the way Quinn Hughes is skating with the puck and how he continues to walk the line. And, you know, he puts stress on a defense, is able to find shooting lanes, even though he's not always taking them, right? It seems like there are creases there. And then sometimes he still wants to get the puck and then move it back to Pettersson, but doesn't necessarily put him into that window to shoot. So I think that's one of those areas that they've really got to get figured out. We had this big debate on Press Row with Drancer about Pew Suter.
Mm-hmm.
And his value on the Miller-Besser line. And I'm trying to wrap my head around why he's on PP1. Like, you want a left-handed shot in the bumper, and there's not much of a shot there. Like, he doesn't have goal-scoring instincts. He does a lot of other things really well, but that's not necessarily his sweet spot. And there's been a couple that made its way there, and he didn't get much of it. Like, come on, Nils Höglander's doing everything he could possibly do. Put him on PP1 in that spot.
It is.
Or Zadorov, which the coach suggested at the end of the night.
It is curious. So you got a guy that scored 22 all at even strength. If it's just about hammering a puck as a left-handed shot, it does feel like the time has come. I mean, people were banging the drum just to get him power play time, and I've got time for the argument of promoting Höglander to the left as a left-handed shot into that bumper. Didn't happen here. But yeah, I mean, let's get into the whole Pia Suter situation then, I suppose. No Elias Lindholm, day-to-day, they say, and we'll see if day-to-day remains day-to-day or if it becomes
week-to-week. It's Canucks day-to-day.
Whatever the case, no Elias Lindholm for the first time since he was acquired. And just kind of got a sense at practice on Sunday that they had lined up. They knew that he wasn't going to play, and that's why they had Pia Suter moving back into that third-line center spot to start the hockey game on a line with Amon and Podkolzin. And Bluger was left to play with Mikheyev and Lafferty. You saw them right off the hop. They got the opening faceoff of the hockey game, sort of the matchup against Fiala. And, you know, Rick Tocchet had last change, so he was able to try to dictate the matchups. But the Kings are a bit of a matchup nightmare because their scoring is so balanced. They came into this game with three guys tied for the team lead, and another player is their goal-scoring leader. So they are a balanced attack, and certainly when you've got Kopitar and Danault, you know, they've got their defensive chops as well. So they're a tough team to match up against. Whatever the case, when you're down 3-1 going to the third period, like it seemed to me like Rick Tocchet got the blender out and I think maybe outcoached himself a little bit at times in the third period. Now, part of that was I think there was some message sending to Brock Besser who kind of felt like the odd man out. And again, he wasn't going, didn't have a shot on goal, didn't have a shot attempt in the first 40 minutes of the hockey game. And that was a huge part of the problem. Miller, Pettersson, Besser, Hoglander, your top four goal scorers. Not one of them had a shot on goal for him through the first 40 minutes of play, but Besser was the guy that was fighting it the most on the night. Whatever the case, you're down two, you need some offense. And we saw Tocchet go Miller and Pettersson together, sometimes with Garland, sometimes with Hoglander. And then he started to move pieces all over the place. It seemed to me like leave Garland, Pettersson, and Hoglander, a line that's been going for you for the past week, leave them and just put Suter back with Miller and Besser and see if you couldn't generate something, get that early goal you're looking for to make it a one-goal game and still have plenty of time. But he really wanted to get the blender out and just continue to try all sorts of combinations when really nothing was working. One shot on goal in the first 15 minutes of that third period.
Yeah, and then we saw early in that period, Hughes and Roenick had put together, and they're clearly more comfortable there, especially Roenick. And really both of them. I mean, I think Quinn Hughes can play with everybody, but there are times when, you know, Myers tries to just fire it over there, and it's not always the best thing. I think if you have Myers kind of drive his own prayer, I think you're kind of better off, but I'm with you, right? Like, Pia Suter is a useful player for this team, but he seems to, even though he's not even remotely involved in the points, Besser and Miller are better with Suter on that line, right? And Phil DiGiuseppe and Nils Amon are kind of the spare parts on this team, right? That as soon as Lindholm and Joshua get back, if they're all healthy, those two guys have to be the scratches. They just do, right? Podkolzin's done enough to stay in the lineup. And if it's me, you know, like I would have done just what you suggest. I would have put Suter back in the wing, let Nils Amon play fourth line center. You could rotate Podkolzin and Mikheyev on the third line just to get Podkolzin enough time and play DiGiuseppe and Amon very little. Give me Bluger and Lafferty all day, right? I thought those two guys were really noticeable in the first 40 minutes of the game. They play the game the right way. They just work and they work with each other. I thought those two guys were really noticeable. So, you know, whether it's Mikheyev with them or Podkolzin with them or a bit of both, but those first two lines shouldn't have changed. There was no need for them to change. I get that this team has gotten so comfortable trying to have a great spine, right? And be good down the middle that, okay, well, Suter's really good for us. Let's put him there. But if you could just decide to limit the ice time on Amon and just play a fourth line 6-7 minutes of the game, you're going to be just fine.
You talk about down the middle. Blake Lizotte went up the middle when it was already a 3-1 game, had a chance to really put the game away. Probably Casey DeSmith's best save. Kept the Canucks hanging around. The Lotto line got a look right after that. So again, part of this, you know, pulling out all the stops and trying different things. Rick Tocchet went to the Lotto line. And then with just under 8 minutes to go, Brock Besser, the interference penalty on Drew Doughty. I know people in the rink thought maybe Doughty sold it. Look, the guy's been around.
He sold it, but it was interference.
Besser's standing there. And
he leans in right before.
No, I didn't have a huge problem. I know people, look, when things don't go the home team's way, they want to get on the officials and look for a scapegoat. But I think any venting at the officials in this hockey game was misguided. This was a Canucks team that just didn't do enough. They had the early power play. They had late power play as well. And it just felt that 3-1, like they got their bounce. The Besser goal that goes in off Kopitar, it just kind of felt like, okay, you got your bounce there. You're going to have to work hard now to get the equalizer. And yeah, they got the goalie out. And in fact, aggressive goalie pull with 4.5 minutes to play. Zadorov in front of the net, no problems there. He's a big body that's hard to handle. And then Doughty takes a penalty of his own with 20 seconds to go. You know, a desperation look. JT after the game said, at that point, there's just too much traffic in front of the net. You're hoping, basically. And even though they worked that puck around to him coming off the left flank.
If he gets the shot, you never know. Like, it was right in his wheelhouse, and he just happened to fumble it in that moment.
Yeah.
And there was a lot of that. Like, you know, some with Miller, but he wasn't alone. You know, and I don't know if we want to get into it, but, like, we've seen a bit of this now.
Mm-hmm.
And are we ready to buy into the ice argument?
I am. Yeah, I've heard enough. I know Kevin Woodley pointed out the fact that Cam Talbot changed out the blades of his skates because the Kings didn't have a morning skate, the 6 o'clock start, neither team. So you're the Kings. You haven't been here in 3 weeks or whatever. You're familiar with the building, but Woodley's sense was that Cam Talbot, because of the ice and how soft it was, wanted different blades in his skates and makes that change 4 minutes in. So, you know, it's not just two guys here talking on a podcast. This is...
Yeah, there's a reputation around the league.
Absolutely. And bouncing pucks and now concerts in there each of the next two nights before they play the Dallas Stars on Thursday. So if you thought the ice was choppy and bouncing, just wait till the Stars arrive here on Thursday. But yeah, I mean, we've heard this for a while. And I guess there's enough sort of empirical evidence now that... this doesn't feel like one of the better ice surfaces in the National Hockey League.
Well, and you know, they've made upgrades, right? Like now a lot of the upgrades provide revenue, right? Suites and restaurants and club lounges and things like that. But they did invest in the scoreboard, right? Mm-hmm. Which doesn't necessarily give back revenue. It does enhance the fan experience. But I think this is the next thing, because when you can, when you, you know, if you play a straight ahead game, a meat and potatoes lunch bucket game like the LA Kings do, it's not going to affect you. If you try to play a highly skilled game like Vancouver's top players do, it's going to affect you more. And that's just the way it is. And guess what? Number 9 and number 40, they're on long-term deals. And I would imagine that you want 43 to be here a while. So it might be time to do something about the ice machine and get it up to where it needs to be so it's not viewed as one of the worst ice surfaces in the league, which it clearly is.
Canucks wore their black skate, which usually is guaranteed win night, except apparently the LA Kings just don't care. They wear black on home ice themselves. The Canucks have lost three times, Farhan, in the black skate this year, twice to the Kings now, and once to the New Jersey Devils back.
So they got to wear blue next time.
Yeah, maybe blue chrome. Beat the Kings at their own game, whatever the case. One more meeting with the Los Angeles Kings, and that's down at crypto.com, and then maybe more to come. Come playoff time, just to quickly update the out-of-town scoreboard, the Oilers were idle. They're in Winnipeg, so the Canucks remain 10 in front of Edmonton. The Oilers do have three games in hand again. The Los Angeles Kings, though, Oilers maybe want to be looking over their shoulder because the Kings with this win now creep within a single point of the Oilers in that battle for second place in the Pacific, and that's important because that's going to be home ice for whoever finishes in that second slot. Vegas pulls out an overtime win after a late St. Louis goal, so the Golden Knights up to 85 points. They're five clear of St. Louis in the race for the final wild card, but more importantly, they stick with LA. So Edmonton at 88, LA at 87, Vegas at 85. Things definitely interesting in those second, third, and fourth slots in the Pacific Division.
How about Jim Hiller? Should we be talking about him as a coach of the year candidate? Like, he's wearing the interim tag, and he's got this team right there. Nashville as well, right? Like, you've got to take a look at that.
But the Kings got off to a great start. Remember, they won their first 11 on the road this year. And they've been one of the best defensive teams with the best penalty kill. They, I don't know if the message got stale. Like, I'm a fan of Todd McLellan, wherever he's been. But sometimes the message does get a little stale. I think there are other interim coaches that have, I mean, Chris Knobloch's done an incredible job, obviously, turning the Oilers back in the right direction. But you knew that at some point they would figure it out. And obviously, whatever they're drinking in Nashville these days, the job that Andrew Burnett's doing. Still think Rick Tocchet is the guy to beat for coach of the year. But it's going to be interesting to see if all three of the finalists come out of the West. Canucks' three-game win streak comes to an end. So that snapped with this 3-2 loss. They're 4-2-1 on the homestand now. This is where it gets a little dicey to me. You know, I think they had one loss to give here this week. If they win their next two and they go 6-2-1 on the homestand, I think you call that a rousing success. If they go 1-1 over these final two and finish 5-3-1. I mean, it's still head above water and keeping the Oilers at bay, but it really felt like an opportunity to put the hammer down here and pull away from everybody and lock up a lot of the things that are available to them. So, look, Dallas isn't going to be easy. The Dallas Stars are right there battling with Colorado for top spot in the Central, but also in the conference. They're one of the highest scoring teams in the National Hockey League. So the Canucks will have their hands full on Thursday, and then Anaheim's in to wrap up the homestand on Sunday afternoon. 3-2, the Vancouver Canucks fall to the Los Angeles Kings. Jeff and Farhan with you here as we continue to break it all down. Lots still ahead. We're going to hear from the coach and a couple of the key players in this hockey game. We'll have our three-star selection. We'll have the stat that stands out, some listener feedback as well, and we'll look ahead to what is to come for the Vancouver Canucks, expecting an off day on Tuesday, back to practice on Wednesday. And that's the benefit of these days between games on the homestand. Keep the suitcases away. They don't travel again until they're on the road in Vegas and Arizona a week from now. But 3-2, the final score. The Los Angeles Kings come to town and defeat the Vancouver Canucks. You're listening to Rinkwide Vancouver.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at UH1.com.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Finding your perfect home was hard, but thanks to Burrow, furnishing it has never been easier. Burrow's easy-to-assemble modular sofas and sectionals are made from premium, durable materials, including stain and scratch-resistant fabrics. So they're not just comfortable and stylish, they're built to last. Plus, every single Burrow order ships free right to your door. Right now, get 15% off your first order at burrow.com/ACAST. That's 15% off at burrow.com/ACAST.
Kings defeat the Vancouver Canucks. You're listening to Rinkwide Vancouver. Kevin Fiala, Blake Lizotte, Anze Kopitar gets the winner for the Kings late in the second period. It was Sam Lafferty on a nice individual effort in the first, and Brock Besser on the bounce. A couple of bouncing goals at the same end of the ice. The Lizotte goal, the Besser goal, some similarities there in off posing skates. They all count. For Besser, it's up to 37, but we talked about the fact this was not a great night for Brock Besser. I hope that there are bigger and better things ahead with 10 games to go. It helps in his quest for 40. You need some lucky ones and some good fortune along the way. So he needs 3 goals now over the final 10 games to get to that 40-goal mark. All right, if this was Las Vegas, maybe you would say that the cards fell the Golden Knights' way, or they hit the jackpot. Whatever the case, the Kings aren't the Golden Knights, so I can't use any sort of slot machines. But
they have casinos in L.A. You can...
Sure, I suppose there are. There are casinos just about everywhere. For Rick Tocchet, basically, this game boiled down to, the flip of a coin.
It's a coin flip type of game. They hit heads and won. They got a couple around the paint. I think that's really what it comes down to.
All right, is it as simple as a coin flip? I mean,
well, it is to a point when you look at how these goals went in, right? I mean, you can't say at any point that the Kings dominated the Canucks. And I think he's right. He'll talk about execution in a bit. We'll get into that. But one of the things that I noticed when you look at the bounces on the second and third goals, Casey DeSmith has been really good in place of Thatcher Demko. This is not a criticism of Casey DeSmith, but one of the things that Casey DeSmith is relatively small compared to today's goaltender. And as a result, in order to cut off angles and be big and take up more space and take away shooting angles, he comes out farther. And when he attacks and comes out farther, a lot is left behind him. And you saw that on goals 2 and 3. Now, there's nothing he can do. He can't grow 6 inches between now and when Thatcher Demko comes back. But does that mean the team around him has to play a little bit differently? Right? Do they need to be more aggressive with shot blocks? Do they need to, or maybe the other way around, maybe they don't need to try to block shots. Maybe they need to get on the side, let him have a clear look as he's cutting down the angle and then being in position to clear out rebounds and, you know, in garbage. We talked about the one rebound on the Kopitar goal that maybe he could have had, but generally he plays aggressively and he has to because of his size. And there is a downside to that.
Just 6 blocked shots after Rick Tocchet went on about liking the goaltender, and they have blocked more shots for Casey DeSmith in other games, but single digits for the Vancouver Canucks on the shot blocking count, 13-6, the shot blocks in favor of the Los Angeles Kings. This was a night where the Canucks just couldn't get things going offensively. Give the Kings credit. We talked about that, structure and staples and everything else. But you asked Rick Tocchet about those first 15 minutes of the third period, and particularly the best players and the fact that it took them far too long to get revved up and to make things happen. This was Rick Tocchet on the fact that, the Canucks needed a little more from their top-end guys and certainly better execution across the board.
I didn't think our execution was that. I didn't think we were just missing a little bit execution-wise tonight. So, yeah, 8 or 9 chances each. They capitalized on a couple, but like I said, it was a hard-fought game, but, it's a good game for us to realize that execution, and we got to make sure that we go to spots to score goals. I mean, some other guys got to know where to go sometimes to score goals, and you got to be ready for it.
Yeah, another learning lesson. Tocchet talks often about learning lessons, file it away. We've mentioned the fact that they're going to see the Kings again at least one more time and quite possibly in the playoffs as well. Need to know where to go on the ice to make some things happen. There were some chances in this game. Like when I think back, Teddy Bluger had a wraparound. He was sort of set up in the office, had some time in the second period, and nobody came to him. So he was able to walk out from behind the net and try and stuff it home. Ilya Mikheyev on a rebound of a Tyler Myer shot. And for me, it felt like slow motion after Talbot made the original save because half the net was wide open and Mikheyev kind of spun around. And by the time he corralled the puck and was able to get a shot away, Talbot was able to get over and cut him off and make the save that he had to there.
In the final minute, Mikheyev was on the receiving end of 2 slot passes. Both of them just get deflected wide. You know, we talk about JT Miller, right, in the final 20 seconds when he had the puck on his stick and fumbled it. Hughes and Pettersson just getting their wires crossed at the blue line on the power play. And there was a lot of that. Like when he talks about execution, he's not wrong. And, I've been as critical as anyone of Elias Pettersson when he's not going. And I didn't hate what he did today. I just didn't. He was skating. He was attempting to create. He was attempting to deke and beat people. But the puck was a bit of a hand grenade in the hands of some of the Canucks' top players. And so how much of that is the ice? How much of that is them? I don't want to get into a thing for the next, month of blaming ice. Like, they got to get past that just like they have all season. But it does feel like it's just a little bit off as opposed to effort not being there. And, those things that we worry about with a guy like Pettersson, like, it's the eye test. You can see it when he's attempting to be confident and create. And I think he was doing that today. But the execution, to the coach's point, I think he's accurate. They were just off. They were just, the skating is there for Pettersson. The whole thing last week about the question from Daniel Wagner and, when you're moving your feet, did you need a reminder? He's had the reminder. He's moving his feet. His hands just aren't there right now.
Just one shot on goal for EP40 in this hockey game. And look, the other thing too, and there has been signs of life, but we said there are better opponents ahead than Buffalo and Washington and Montreal and Calgary.
And that's part of it, right? Like they're facing that. They're going to face that this week against Dallas, and it'll get a little easier against Anaheim. But, they've been good at taking care of those poor opponents, but they have to continuously step up. And you and I have both said they can do it. We saw it on that road trip when they beat Winnipeg, right? When they beat the Kings and when they beat Vegas. We've seen them do it, and they've got to do it in these meaningful games over the final 10.
Want to play a clip from Quinn Hughes here because I thought certainly in the first 2 periods in a game that had that playoff intensity where bodies were flying and the Kings have this stifling forecheck, Quinn Hughes skated miles. And it was another night where he was a one-man breakout machine. And it's got to be so frustrating try and track him down and try to get a piece of him. Now, Arvidsson did, and we said a little frustration shown from Quinn Hughes with the slashing penalty. Now,
that was softer than the Besser call.
Yeah, I suppose. I mean, you put a stick on a guy, though, and it was clear retaliation. I mean, Quinn doesn't get hit often, and it was obviously didn't like it. And I think the referees get caught watching him as well. Like, how you're mesmerized. You're always watching him when he's out there.
His conditioning, like we talk about his edge work and the fact that he's able to stop on a dime and change directions and do things in the third period. It is amazing.
Played 10 minutes and 54 seconds of the third period, 26:35 on the night. His final shift, 3 minutes and 57 seconds. He didn't come off the ice in the final 3 minutes and 57 seconds. Of course, that included a power play.
And a timeout.
And look, he was trying to create. I mean, that's what he does. He does it better than just about anybody in this league.
Can I say this, though?
Mm-hmm.
Early in the season, we were talking about how much more aggressive he was shooting the puck. And even if it was a quick snapshot or a quick wrist shot from the blue line, before your opponent can get set and get ready to block a shot and take away shooting lanes, I'm seeing him skate miles, but is he as aggressive shooting the puck as he was earlier in the season? You know, my eye test tells me no.
Yeah, and so here's Quinn Hughes. I think this was your question to him about all those offensive forays. Is there a way to make them meaningful, more meaningful? I mean, again, this guy's got 80 points, 81 points now after picking up an assist in this hockey game. He's done it on so many nights in so many different ways. But tonight, against the Los Angeles team that protects the middle, you know, was there more Quinn Hughes could have done with some of those attempts where he carried the puck deep into the Los Angeles zone?
You know, something I got to be wary of just making sure that I'm getting to my point and making a grade A chance instead of just exerting energy. And had some couple, you know, that backhand in the second and a shot in the second I liked, both from the right side of the rink, and I'll take those chances any day. But as far as that, I think I'd, you know, probably want to have a couple more shots in that throughout the game. But thought some guys played really well, and obviously not much Casey can do on those two goals there.
Yeah, not much that Casey Smith could do. We've already talked about those, but I thought a pretty honest answer from Quinn there that, yeah, like, it's great that he's able to gain the zone with possession. Then what do you do?
Here's my analogy. Remember the Twins early in their career when they would cycle and cycle and cycle and never come out of it? You know what I mean? Like, all that zone time and all that cycle time never led to high danger scoring chances. And then eventually they figured it out, and then it became, you know, even more poetry in motion. And I think that needs to happen. So Quinn Hughes with three shot attempts tonight. One made it through to the goal, one got blocked, one was wide, right? And I just think when the puck was on a stick as much as it was, there was more there for him. And again, this guy is so good. I'm not trying to be critical, but I just saw how aggressive he was with his shot early in the year. And I think the Canucks would be better served if, rather than going around the net or the offensive zone twice, maybe you do it just once and shoot the puck.
A frustrating night for everybody. It includes JT Miller, who wears his heart on his sleeve, and he was asked at the end of the night, and we had to wait for him a little bit of treatment after the hockey game. So maybe it was just time to cool down as well. We know he can run hot and be an emotional guy. But he did come out. He faced the media and answered the questions. And one of them was about, you know, our team's now looking at the Vancouver Canucks as a measuring stick. When you saw the way the Los Angeles Kings celebrate, they're in this hunt to try to track down Edmonton. They want every win. Every point's valuable to them. And they were pretty fired up, obviously, to come to Vancouver, starting a four-game road trip, and they're going to be in Edmonton later this week. So good start to the road trip for the Kings. And JT Miller was asked about the idea of the Canucks now as the top team in the Pacific, and heading into the night, they were the top team in the league, so they're the hunted. And he admits that, yeah, absolutely. He's noticed that teams are measuring themselves against the Vancouver Canucks.
And I love the fact when, you know, they're banging their, you know, I don't love losing games, but, you know, when other teams are banging their sticks and when that last puck's cleared out, you know, they know they just beat a good hockey team. I mean, it says a lot. And, you know, it's going to be a lot of hard games here coming down. This is good prep for us, and we got to find a way to win games like that and, you know, not give up the late one in the second or whatever happened. And, you know, I mean, they're all tight against LA. I mean, that's just how it is going to be this time of year.
Yeah, doesn't like to see other teams celebrating. Wants to win all the time. You're not going to win. The Canucks have won way more than they have lost. Their record now at 45-19-8, so just their 19th outright loss. But again, some honesty at the end of the answer there, knowing that this is the kind of, you know, and other teams are going to watch these games too far ahead and say, hey, this is how the Kings have had success against the Vancouver Canucks. Maybe we have to adapt our style. And
that's tough, though. Now, you can't play like them unless you've played like them.
Fair enough.
Right? That it's all of a sudden. I mean, and I guess we've seen teams
fans,
before.
Fans everywhere are shuddering, thinking that more teams are going to play that style. But ultimately, it's did you get it done? And yeah, the LA Kings got it done. So we'll see if teams are able to try to take a page from their book. But JT Miller acknowledging that, yeah, I mean, again, you know, we've talked about the fact that Philadelphia twice this year has been able to stifle the Canucks in these games where you have to fight for every inch. Minnesota has been able to sort of dumb things down twice, and then they had the crazy 10-7 game. So maybe the Wild's not the example I'm looking for here. But whatever the case, games are tightening up. We see it on a nightly basis. And the Vancouver Canucks are going to have to figure out a way to break down some opponents here as they carry on with 10 games to go in the regular season. All right, we'll move on to the three-star selection, the Rinkwide Vancouver three-star selection. The three stars picked in the building, Anze Kopitar, Cam Talbot, and Quinn Hughes. Now,
Cam Talbot, come on.
Right, that's where I'm going.
Yeah, like, the great save against Mikheyev and...
But he faced 23 shots. I mean, he had a lawn chair out for the first 15 minutes of the third period.
Yeah.
I'm a little surprised at that. I think for me, Kevin Fiala is just always dangerous. I'm drawn to him, watching him play, open the scoring. And we talked about the importance of getting that first goal for the Los Angeles Kings. I know Kopitar at first star, no problems there. He had a goal and an assist. And it's crazy just looking through their game notes that like he is closing in on top 50 all-time NHL scoring and games played. Like, this guy has been so good for so long and still going strong.
Most career 40 assist seasons. He's up to 14.
Yeah.
Matching Sidney Crosby. It's pretty good.
It was part of Sid's draft class way back in 2005. So for me, I would go Kopitar, Quinn Hughes, who did everything in his power yeah. to generate the equalizer for the Vancouver Canucks. And then I'm going to throw Kevin Fiala a bone because that first goal is just so important for the Los Angeles Kings. And he was the one to score it. So those are the Rinkwide Vancouver three stars, Anze Kopitar, Quinn Hughes, and Kevin Fiala. Don't go away. We're not done. We've got lots of shows still to come. We'll get to our stat that stands out, some listener feedback, and whatever else we can squeeze into this 500th episode of Rinkwide Vancouver.
Is there cake?
There should have been. That's my bad. But after the fact, retroactive cake somewhere down the line. My treat. 3-2, the Kings defeat the Vancouver Canucks. You're listening to Rinkwide Vancouver. Continuing to talk about this Los Angeles 3-2 victory over the Vancouver Canucks. Kings have taken 2 of 3. From the Canucks, there's still one to come, and that'll be early April in Los Angeles to round out the four-game season series. Going to get to our stat that stands out, and this is one of those nights where the underlying numbers, the eye test versus the analytics, we'll get to that in a sec, but I know that you wanted just to throw out a thought or two from Anze Kopitar, who, again, scores the winner and also picks up an assist. So in on 2 of the 3 Kings goals in this hockey game.
Well, generally, you know, when you talk about how the Kings play, you are on some levels suggesting it's awful, it's ugly, you know, and teams around the league will say that and they know how they're being labeled. And the Kings aren't running from it, right? I mean, Anze Kopitar asked after the game, there's still some mistakes and everything, but our checking game is there. We're frustrating teams a little bit, which is, I guess, a good sign for us. We've got to keep playing that way and keep doing our thing. So, hey, it's not going anywhere, and they're damn proud of it.
Yeah, and the last time they were in, Cam Talbot said he could sense that the Canucks were getting frustrated, and that was that 5-1 loss. So I'm sure the Canucks aren't alone. We mentioned this earlier. The Kings go into Los Angeles. Massive game on Thursday. You've got all of this firepower on the Edmonton side, and you've got this blanket that the Kings try to throw over opponents. And of course, the Oilers have got the better of the Kings in the first round each of the last couple of years. So some baggage there, but we'll see how things shake down. And again, quite possibly, there's so many scenarios. There's still so much volatility all over the place at the top of the conference, but also around the playoff bars. So it doesn't even make sense to try and look at all the possible scenarios. I think you just focus on your own game and doing your own thing. But let's get to the stat that stands out, because for me, if you just looked at natural stat trick at the end of this night, and again, all of the goals came, I want to say 5-on-5, although the Canucks didn't have a fifth player on the ice. And then they scored 6-on-5, so they weren't all 5-on-5 goals. But at even strength at the very least, the Vancouver Canucks controlled 60% of the shot attempts. The scoring chances at evens were better than a 2-1 margin for the Canucks. 20-9. High dangers, 10-4 in favor of the Canucks. The Canucks held the Kings to 4 high danger chances. Now, we were talking about this along press row as well. The Fiala goal, off the rush, no chance for Casey DeSmith, but not considered a high danger chance, I guess, too far from the net to officially fall into that category, but Fiala's not missing from there.
Well, so. And again, as much as DeSmith aggressively attacked it, Fiala was left with an open net.
Yes. So the numbers would tell you, and the expected goals, again, a 2-1 margin for the Canucks, but at the end of the night, the scoreboard shows 3 for the Kings and 2 for the home side. So there you go, a bunch of stats that stand out, but the one that stands out the most for the Kings is they got one more goal than the Vancouver Canucks did. They win this hockey game by a score of 3-2. All right, always like to hear what the people have to say. So let's get to some listener feedback from our social channels at Rinkwide Van. Ray says LA might be the most boring team in the league. There are some others. I'm not sure I want a healthy dose of San Jose or Chicago these days, but this is a separate category. This is above the playoff bar. But again, they know their identity and there is something to that.
They want a Stanley Cup this way, probably too.
Yeah. So again, I know it's not fun to watch. It's not fun to cover, but there is something to be said about sticking to your identity. And
hey, these are staples.
Yeah.
Okay. If the Canucks played like this, everybody would find a way to put lipstick on a pig and talk about how disciplined and hard-nosed and, you know, yeah, playoff built, all of that stuff.
Tyler says, gotta start winning some of these games against potential playoff opponents, and then puts Colorado, LA, and Vegas in parentheses. Look, they got a nice win in Vegas. The win in Los Angeles, you have to remember Thatcher Demko made his save of the year off Alex Turcotte. Might have been different if he doesn't make that save, but they did get the win. Colorado has been the bugaboo for the Vancouver Canucks, but they won't see the Avs until the third round. And I've said this before, if they get to the third round, this season has been off the charts good for the Vancouver Canucks. So worry about Colorado when you get there. DeHawk says, DeSmith didn't have a good night. Positioning and rebound control lacking. You've mentioned the fact that he's aggressive and he comes out. And sometimes that puck squirts through and then that's where trouble begins. Brent says Myers playing with Hughes is brutal. We did touch on that one. And be interesting to see if Rick Tocchet saw the same things and if they decide to go back to their usual pairings. Because Puck Mama is saying, any idea why Tocchet switched up the D pairs to start the game?
Yeah, I think it's because of who they were playing, right? And yeah. I think with LA and the way they forecheck, I think he wanted to make sure that they could exit the puck a little bit better. But he did do this a few games ago where he split up Hughes and Hronek and it didn't work. And Hughes can do whatever he wants. It's just sometimes Hronek can't, right? And, you know, you play him with Zadorov and, you know, you've got to have a certain level of chemistry and comfort. Whereas Hronek playing with Hughes is I don't want to say had it easy because Hronek's done some good things as well. But, you know, we know who drives that pair and there's a lot less pressure on Hronek. When he plays with somebody else, it changes and it's got to be about him a little bit, right? And I think you need to get comfortable with your partner when it is going to be about you. So I think they should go back. I didn't like it at the start of the year, but at this stage of the season, I do think they should go back to that. And I got to be honest, I love Noah Juulsen in the lineup. I think they're better with him in.
Well, it'll be interesting to see. He came out after Cole had sat for 2 games. Ian Cole back in, and I thought Ian Cole was trying to be physical. Look, the Canucks as a team were trying to be physical. The hits, again, 2-1 margin, 46-24, so not quite a 2-1 margin. But you look through the hit column, Sam Lafferty with 8, JT Miller with 7, Connor Garland with 6, Vasily Podkolzin had 5. And that leads us to B. Reynolds, who says, Canucks forwards are too small to win rebounds.
Yeah, I don't know about that. You're capable of getting inside. You can out-quick people. You just have to have the desire to get to those spots. And the smallest of them, I think, do, right? I think Garland and Hoglander have that.
Yeah, I thought Garland's motor was running. I mean, it always is. But I noticed him a little bit more than Hoglander. And that's not to say that Hoglander played poorly. The effort level, the battle level is there. We talked about Podkolzin and his work on that first goal. You know, I think he's doing everything in his power to continue to, you know, stake a claim in this lineup. So it will be interesting to see. We saw Dakota Joshua back at practice on Sunday in the non-contact jersey. Will he be a full participant by Wednesday's practice? That's certainly something to watch. Obviously, the Lindholm storyline isn't going away either. But when Joshua gets back in there, bring some size. If he can find his game again in a hurry, can add some offense as well. And it really will be interesting to see where he slots back in for the Vancouver Canucks.
Yeah, I mean, I've said it before that the Bluger, Garland, Joshua line for me is kind of an all or nothing deal. And you either play them all together or you put those two wingers in the top six. Because when you look at the Canucks lineup coming into the year and you looked at top six wingers, Connor Garland was one of them. Without that, like, who do they have other than Brock Besser? They don't, especially with Lindholm not having worked out as a top six winger yet. So for me, if I was drawing up the lines, I would have Garland, Hoglander, and Pettersson staying right where they are. And I'd put Dakota Joshua on the top line with Miller and Besser. I think he could bring a lot to that line. You know, Suter's done some good things with them, but he's never going to be an offensive driver. I look at Joshua, and this guy has got top six hands. The way he played this year prior to the injury. Now, it's a hand injury, so we'll see what that looks like, but I would do that. So, and again, I'm not against putting that third line together. I just think it's an all or nothing deal, right? If you're expecting Joshua and Bluger to be two-thirds as good without Garland, it ain't going to happen, right? So if you want to have that level of effectiveness, either put them all together or let both those guys play in the top six.
Appreciate everybody contributing. Lots of people talking about the ice surface. So it's not just us. The fans are starting to see it as well. And it'll be interesting to see where this goes. It's not something, obviously, that can be done in season. But we'll see if it's something that the Vancouver Canucks ultimately have to bite the bullet and invest in a new ice plant and try to upgrade the ice surface and the playability in the games at Rogers Arena. But as we mentioned earlier, concerts in there the next couple of nights. So we'll see what the ice is like when the Dallas Stars come to town. It is the same for both teams. Now, the Stars a little more up-tempo than the Los Angeles Kings, so maybe we get a little bit more back and forth. Somewhat surprising, the Dallas Stars are the second highest scoring team in the National Hockey League.
Wow.
And it's just across the board. They've got a whole bunch of, you know, sort of 20 to 25 goal scorers that find a way to get it done. Always fun to watch Miro Heiskanen when he comes to town, two of the great skaters in the league, and Quinn Hughes and Heiskanen. And our first look at old friend Chris Tanev in a green Dallas Stars uniform. So that'll be a little different to see Chris Tanev, but you know what you're getting from him, an honest effort, and I'm sure he'll block a few pucks against his former teammates in the Vancouver Canucks. But Canucks haven't had to bounce back too often throughout the season, and this wasn't a terrible effort. The execution was lacking, certainly. So I'm not sure that I put this in the bounce back category after, you know, some of the losses that they have had. But again, I said it earlier, I stand by it. I think 6-2-1 is an impressive homestand. 5-3-1 just kind of feels like it's the bare minimum to me. So see if they can get her done against the Dallas Stars on Thursday night.
You're right. You know, and think about that. If they find a way to lose that game, there is some pressure for a Sunday afternoon matinee to just beat Anaheim, isn't there? Well, so you don't go below 500, because at that point you might let Edmonton play themselves back into this.
Yeah, and I think that is the concern. Let's see what happens. Edmonton's going to have a tough one in Winnipeg, although the Jets right now are reeling, so who knows how tough it'll ultimately be. But after the weekend losses in Ontario for the Oilers, they're going to be looking to get back on track here. So lots going on as the Canucks sit and watch and check out the out-of-town scoreboard. But the one that matters most is the scoreboard at Rogers Arena, where they have two games to go on the homestand. And you're right. Like, to me right now, Casey DeSmith on Thursday against Dallas, but I'm looking at Artur Silovs to get the Anaheim game. Just
if they win on Thursday. If they don't, they might not approach it that way.
I tend to agree. I think that that is probably the way it all shakes down. And maybe somewhere along the line here, we'll get some sort of update on Thatcher Demko, who saw him out at the bench during a practice last week, but that's the only sighting that I've had of Demko. And so not expecting to see him back on the ice certainly this week. And we'll see where things go. There's still time on his side and on their side to allow him to fully recover and get a few games before the end of the regular season. That's going to do it for us. I've mentioned a few times that this is episode 500, which is a pretty cool milestone. I haven't been around for all 500 episodes, but I want to say probably close to 400 of those. But a shout out to Andrew Wadden and J.D. Burke, who got the ball rolling way back when. I know that we've been delighted to have you on a handful of episodes.
I'm honored for this one.
Listen to the program as well, so we appreciate that support. And we obviously don't get to 500 in the podcasting world if you don't have the listeners. So thank you to everybody that continues to make Rinkwide part of their listening lineup, and we're looking forward with 10 to go, and then the real fun, playoff hockey returning to Vancouver. Now, the Canucks couldn't lock down that playoff spot, but they're going to get there. They'll be there when the postseason begins, but they missed an opportunity to clinch the playoff spot with a 3-2 loss to the Los Angeles Kings. So for Farhan and for Mike Rogerson, our producer behind the scenes, thanks to everybody for checking out another edition of Rinkwide Vancouver.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
Hey, marketers. Want a matchmaker to set you up with your perfect audience? Well, look no further. Get intimate right away with host-read sponsorships with Acast. Use Acast's self-serve ad platform to search and partner up with a podcaster or two from our network of more than 100,000 shows. Have them sing your praises in their own words. And get their listeners ready to be wooed into loyal customers. It's the ultimate loving endorsement. Book host-read sponsorships with Acast. Head to go.acast.com/closer to get started.